was saying we'd go up to Elba and visit our oldest folks up there. We'd always have a good time there. The kids enjoyed Elba, be out on the ranch, around the animals. And all the family made quite a fuss over the kids anyway. So we always enjoyed our visits over to Elba. Well, as I say, time marches on. And by this time, we were engaged in another world war. And the people of Conda and the superintendent rallied around the war effort by creating a big victory garden. The company would till the ground and made irrigating ditch down to the ground, and then they would assign each family of Conda a certain portion of this victory garden. And there again, the good people of Conda were united in this effort, and you would be surprised at the enormous amount of foodstuff that was raised in this victory garden. Sorts of vegetables, potatoes. And while we would be up there working our little individual plots and caring for our gardens, other families would be doing the same thing, and we'd have great times up in this victory garden working together and enjoying our association with one another. Our little family was growing up so fast that Golda and I would look at them and look at each other, and we decided we must be growing older. And so we realized that since all the property in Conda was company owned, that one day when we would have to retire, leave Conda, we wouldn't have any home of our own. So Golda and I decided to look around and see if we could find a home that we could call our own. So we found a home in Soda Springs with a little acreage, and so we bought that and we moved into Soda Springs in December of 1950. And the kids were happy to be in town, and we had a milk cow or two, and a saddle horse or two, and DeLoss claimed the horses, and I claimed the cows, and we had a few sheep that Jerry claimed. Marilyn was the chicken girl. She took care of the chickens. So we had a good time. In the meantime, back in 44, my father had passed away. And in 47, my mother passed away. And the fall of the December, when we moved into town, the last day of the year, the 31st of December, Golda's birthday, Golda's mother passed away, and so our Christmas was saddened that year by the death of her mother. But we, through faith in the Lord, and knowing that sometimes what we think is our sorrow is really for the best, because we always remember that old song, "Sometime We'll Understand." The Lord had been good to us all of our lives, and we had appreciated and loved and associated with our parents so much. We truly missed them when they were gone, but we know that they're in the Lord's hands and that all is well. During these wonderful years we've had in Soda Springs, lots of things have happened. We've had lots of blessings. Delos met a wonderful fine girl, Phyllis Hopkins, and they were married. Marilyn met a very fine young man, Larry Swain, and they were married. Jerry filled a mission to France, which pleased us all. And then on his return, he met a lovely young lady by the name of Judy Bona, and they were married. And oh, my lands, all of the fine, wonderful grandchildren that we have gotten for ourselves in these past few years. We love them all. And then our grandchildren have grown, and now we have great-grandchildren. Such a happy, wonderful, fine family we have. We're proud of all of them and love them very much. Well, now I guess this pretty well sums up who David Charles Giles is. And it sort of lets you know who you are, so you can work on your genealogy and get your four generations completed. And I have found that there's nothing more rewarding in life than to live a good life. Do those things that our Heavenly Father would have us do. Be actively engaged in our church, enjoying our families, having family solidarity, to be helpful to each other, and to be associated with our families in all of life's activities, in church, in the community, and in our own homes and private lives, to mingle with one another and enjoy each other. There's nothing more rewarding in life than this. You have all been so wonderful to us. Mom and I appreciate and love you all for the wonderful times you showed us and taking us places and treating us so nice in your homes as we have visited with you. So I'll bring this short summary of my life to a close at this point for the benefit of the boys. To finish off this side of this tape, I might conclude with just a few funny bones. In my young cowboy days, we'd always go out to the Henry Stampede and we'd camp right out there and stay till it was all over with. It was a 3-day show. After one stampede, we were coming into town, me and three or four of my pals and teams, and old Model T Fords were wending their way from their rodeo grounds to head for town. So we struck upon an idea to entertain them, or they thought at least that they were going to be entertained. We had an old wall-eyed horse, was gentle as a kitten. We turned him loose out there on the flat, just this side of Henry. Then we roped him and snubbed him down. One guy would chew on his ears and the other one was putting a saddle on him. And people would come along and they'd see this. They'd say, oh, those guys are going to ride a wild horse. And we had him blindfolded. Finally got him all saddled up. And Jack Circle mounted him. We turned him loose and hit him with our sombreros. And he just stood there and batted his eyes and blinked around a little bit. And the people that had congregated there to see the fun, they just drove off in disgust. In the summertime, quite a few Indians would camp down around Hooper Spring. And me and my pals used to go down there and play with the Indian boys. And sometimes the girls would join in our fun, but they were just a little bit shy. But anyway, these Indians would camp down around the spring there for the summer months. They'd sell their handiwork and trade horses, whatever would come along. They'd shoot rock chucks and squirrels. They used to eat them. I don't know. I don't think I could ever fancy eating one. However, my grandsons tried to get me to eat some squirrel one day, but I couldn't stomach that. But anyway, Jack Thurkel and I, one day we were down there playing with these Indian boys, and there was the prettiest little horse in their band of horses, and he was wild. We thought he was wild anyway, and we asked the Indians if they'd sell us this horse. So they decided they'd sell us this horse for $15. So Jack and I each divvied up 7.5 apiece, and one of the young Indian bucks went out in the band and roped him. Boy, when he roped that horse, he sure was wild. He sure did fight and kick, and we thought, boy, we sure got a wild horse on our hands. But anyway, we snubbed him up to our saddle horns and led him home. And we thought we'd feed him up for a few days before we tried riding him. Finally, one day we got courage to saddle him and try riding him. And Jack and I flipped coins to see who would ride him. And I got the toss. I was to ride this horse. So we decided that rather than to get bucked off and maybe spoil the horse by letting him know that he could buck someone off, Jack snubbed him to his saddle horn, and I got on him, and we rode a little ways, and he didn't do anything, and finally I got to neck reining him a little bit, and he was already broke to neck rein, so Jack just turned him loose, and my golly, you know, that horse had been broke, and he was quite a lot older horse than we thought he was. The Indians had kind of tricked us. The veterinarian came out one day to talk to a sick horse we had, and we had him look in his mouth, and he determined that he was at least 10 years old. But he turned out he was a real good horse, though, but he'd already been broke. The Indians had just trained him to buck and kick around and act wild when they went out and tossed a rope on him. So you see, even your old grandpa can be fooled once in a while. Another time, a beautiful coal black horse got into our bunch of horses that were ranging there just west of, in the foothills there, just west of Hooper Spring. And of course, us guys knew all the horses in the country. And we knew that this black horse belonged to to Dan Raleigh. He was a veterinarian, and he was the pride and joy of Dan. He was a beautiful black horse. He had a long flowing mane and tail. And he had wandered away from home over there at Raleigh's and got up here and with our horses. And so one day we thought we'd have a little fun. So we went back in the foothills and we caught this horse of Dan's and led him over into a grove of trees. We had shears and we roached his mane. We buffed his tail off like a mule tail. And we went over to Pete Anderson's that had a cabin there in the foothills. And he just come out there and stayed in the summertime. In the winter, why, he'd be in town. But anyway, we rummaged around there and we found a can that had some whitewash paint in it. So we took this can out there and we made us some swabs on sticks with wrapping wool around these sticks and tying it onto the end of the stick. And we dipped these swabs into this white paint. We made stripes all around that horse to resemble, as near as we knew how, to look like a zebra. So then we led the horse out over the hill and over to where the bottling works are. And there we turned him loose and headed him for home. Well, when Dan Raleigh saw that horse, he was furious. He was just going to get those guys that whoever had done this to his horse. And I know he'd have killed us if he'd have found out who it was. So we laid pretty quiet. None of us squealed on one another, and we laid pretty quiet. We didn't want to go to jail over this little episode. And in fact, we were so scared that we felt sorry that we had done it. But at the time, it was just all in fun. We didn't think much about it. We just thought that'd be a good joke on Dan Raleigh. Well, they never did find out who done it. And about a year later, of course, the paint was all off the horse and his mane and tail grew out nice. And so Dan, he settled down. He quit searching for those guys that had pulled this trick on him. We always intended, you know, to someday go tell Dan about it and maybe have a good laugh out of it. But we put it off too long. The poor old gentleman, he died and passed away, so he never did find out who pulled that dirty trick and made a zebra out of his beautiful black horse. So my grandsons, I'll give you a little bit of advice here. Think before you act. But it is kind of fun sometimes to do your acting and then you're thinking next. What do you think about that? My dad used to run about 30 or 40 head of brood sows. We had quite a lot of pigs at one time. In the summertime, he had some pens and a nice solid pig corral over on Soda Creek. It was a piece about 40 acres. In the summertime, he'd take these sows and just turn them loose over there on this 40 acres. Of course, it was my job to watch them during the day to see that they didn't get out the fence. It was a barbed wire fence, but you know how a pig is. They didn't find holes. And so it was my job in the summertime to herd these pigs, and then at night we'd always feed them down around their pens and in this corral. So they would come down there to get their feed, and I'd lock them in the corral for the night. And boy, I really had a good pig dog, old Bob. He could turn a pig. You know how contrary a pig is. When you go to drive it, it turns around and faces you, and you have to drive it backwards. Old Bob, he knew how to handle pigs. If there was one that would get up close to the fence and acting like it wanted to get out of the pasture, I'd send old Bob up there. And he'd grab that pig by the ear if it didn't want to turn and go back, and or by the nose. And he had every one of those pigs trained that when he come along, they better show him their hind end and get it going. And my pals used to come over there and play with me a lot. We'd play up along the creek and have a lot of fun. We'd swim, and we'd pick berries, and just had a lot of fun together. We'd have little boats, and we'd float them down the creek. And one day we were up there, and there was sort of a cave in a ledge of rock that come right down there almost to the creek. So we decided to explore this cave a little bit. We started in this cave, and we just barely got started in there. And we turned around and we come out just as fast as we could. One of these old sows had gone in there and made her a bed and farrowed a litter of pigs. And when we started in the cave to explore, this old sow, she was right after us. Boy, we did tear out of there and jumped across that creek and fell in it or splashed and done whatever we could to get away from that old sow. So when you're exploring a cave, be awful careful. In me old age, I knowed I made one little mistake there. I said that was a barbed wire fence, and it was a net wire fence. I'm a little befuddled sometimes. You know how old folks get. Now I could go on and on telling you crazy little things that have happened to me in my life, but I know you'd get tired of listening. I'll tell you one little episode. Frank Lallison and I were driving into Blackfoot one day. It was a warm, hot day, and we had all the windows rolled down in the car. We were just chugging along there, and up ahead of us we noticed what we thought was a whirlwind. We thought it was a bunch of leaves and things that were caught up in this whirlwind, so we didn't pay attention to it. Boy, we drove right into this darn whirlwind, and we discovered it was a swarm of bees. Boy, they just swarmed in that car and all over us. Frank was scared to death of bees, and he just threw his arms around me and jumped up on my shoulders, and I could hardly drive and manipulate that car. But finally I got it off to the edge of the road, and boy, we sure bailed out of that car and ran away from there, and we stayed away until the bees all cleared out of the car and went on their way, and then we came back to the car and went merrily on our way. Neither one of us got a bee sting out of that deal. What do you think of that? Now I'm going to leave one side of this tape blank so that you boys can respond to Grandpa and maybe tell him a little experience that you have had. I'd love to hear that. I've had a lot of fun with my grandkids at Kevin and Corey and David and Lane and Bruce and all those Haver Giles boys that belong to my son Jerry and me. And I appreciate them very much. Remember the time, Brenda, when I showed you how to fold up tents? That was a fun day, wasn't it? Remember Bruce when we rode up in the forest? We separated at the lookout you came your way and I went my way. That was a lot of fun too, chasing those horses all over the mountain. Remember you Giles boys up there at Florence, Montana, when you showed me how to make nigger babies? But the results weren't so good, were they? That water was cold coming out of that hose. But I'll tell you, if you want some real excitement, do as I did one time when I had a shovel and I saw a rabbit, jackrabbit, go into a hole. And I ran over there with my shovel and started digging. And he could dig just about as fast as those darn clams do out on the seashore. But anyway, I caught up with him with my shovel and I grabbed him by the hind legs and pulled him out of the hole. And boy, you should have heard that squealing and seen the fur that was a-flying. He was just a-scratching me all over and a-biting and a-kicking and a-squealing. I couldn't hang on to him anymore. I had to let him go. So if you want to tangle with something exciting, just tangle with a jackrabbit sometime. Another thing, these badgers. Give them their ground. Don't crowd them too close, because they can sure fight. And they can run, too. Jack Circle and I used to locate one once in a while. It had some babies. And we'd ride up about as close as we dared to this old badger. And boy, she'd come right at those horses. They're really tough and rough animals. And they're not afraid of anything. And my small granddaughters, they come into the picture too, and my great-granddaughters. They're kind of small yet, but they're sure cute, and they can think pretty fast too. Some of them will give Grandpa a kiss for a nickel, and some of them just kiss him anyway because they know he hasn't got a nickel. Anyway, we have fun eating candy and playing with each other. They're sweet little gals, all of them. Down in Provo, most of the streets were lined with trees. And of course, they didn't have street lamps in those days to light up the streets. And I remember one night, I was a little skittish of the dark anyway, my mother wanted me to go over to a neighbor's to see if she could borrow something. And so I put on my coat and was trudging up the street, and I had to go up past the major school, and it was kind of spooky up there, and our corral joined the school grounds at the major school, and I was going along there, and I was imagining spooks behind every tree, and just as I got even with our corral gate, my dad had left a white horse in the corral, and I didn't know anything about it, and I guess this white horse was kind of lonesome to go home, and he probably heard me coming up the street and come down to that end of the corral to see what was going on. And just as I got even with the corral gates, the little white horse threw his head up over the gate and nickered at me, and boy, did I ever take off. I was up to the neighbors in nothing flat. When we lived over in Spanish Fork, a bunch of us neighborhood kids were out in the orchard playing games one night. This was up on the bench, the east side of Spanish Fork. And we were having a great time out there. And of course, Mr. McCall, the owner of the orchard, he knew we were out there. And so he thought he'd play a little joke on us. And he took a big white sheet and draped it over his head and come walking out through the orchard. And boy, we saw this ghost, and if we didn't scamper, I believe I was the shortest legged one of the bunch, but I was the first one over the fence and out of the orchard. Of course, I think I left half my pants on the fence. There was a boy, Roy Hansen. He was quite a lot older than I was. His dad had several farms in different localities. And Roy used to run lots of errands for his dad from one place to the other. And he had a horse and buggy, and I loved to get with Roy and go with him with his horse and buggy. So one day my mother had some jobs for me to do, and I knew that Roy was going out in the country someplace, so I waited my chance, and I slipped out the gate and went over to Hanson's and met up with Roy and left my work, and we went out in the country and run several errands around, and it was after dark before we got back home. So when we got home, my horse mother was waiting for me, watching for me. And so her and the dad wasn't home, but her and the girls locked all the doors and turned out all the lights. And when I got home, the place was all dark, and I tried to get in the door, and it was locked. And boy, I began to get scared.